Our next speaker is Maria Ingold. Maria is head of technology at Filmflex Movies in the UK. Filmflex Movies is a leading UK on-demand film service and is co-owned by Sony and Disney. Maria has architected solutions to ingest, manage, and deliver content from over 35 suppliers of video on-demand services, including Virgin Media and Broadband. Filmflex is on-demand films reach over 3.5 million users with over 1 million rentals per month, so quite significant. Maria mixes a background in computer science and fine art, and she has over 19 years of experience across interactive multimedia, new media, games, TV, and film. And today, Maria will share with us her experience and learnings from setting up a video VOD service from scratch. Welcome, Maria.
Thank you. Okay, so a little bit more about Filmflex. We work with over 30 content suppliers. We have all the studios, and we have all the large UK independents. We have been delivering to Virgin Media for over 5 years now, and earlier this year in April, we launched our online movie service with our first partner, Virgin Media, and shortly, hopefully quite soon, with our second partner. We have, on our cable service, we've got 500 films at any time. We have more technical leeway on the online movie service, so we'll be growing it to 1,000 plus over time. So we've had 60 million rentals to date. We are the largest VOD movie service in Europe, and we've done this with 15 people. So, and we've done it for a fraction of the cost of other providers. So I'd just like to share with you what it is we've learned about doing this. I can't tell you exactly how we did it because, as you might guess, there's some intellectual property in there. But what I'd like to do is raise the ideas of things for you to think about and how you might want to move forward with this yourselves. So when you put together a whole process like this, you've got to keep in mind what's your end goal for the short term, what's your end goal for the long term. I'm sure you know that. But we also then break it down into the detailed parts and deal with those details while then thinking through how does this fit into the big picture. So I'm going to break this down for you. We'll go through it. We'll go through those questions. So the first thing that we have is we're dealing with over 30 content suppliers. That means they're going to give us something in completely different formats, all of them. So if we could standardize, that would be great, but everyone has their own way that they want to deliver content. So we standardize as much as we can, and then we accept those differences. So we take that list of what it is that we need to receive, all the films, when they're going on the service, get the content in enough time, and get it either in tape-based format or in, we're currently doing trials for file-based format as well. So when you're putting something like this together, what do you have to think about? Well, what are all the different types of content that you're getting now? What are your processes for putting them in the future? So SD is pretty standard on a VOD service, HD, 3D is starting to take off, and I'm sure as everyone knows from the IBC conference, there's this wonderful super high vision, you know, loads of speakers and much, much, much bigger than HD. So we've got to think about how we deal with that moving forwards. So are you supporting tape-based? Are you doing file-based? If you're supporting tape-based, to be honest, it's a little bit easier because you've just got DigiV to HDCam, HDCam SR to really deal with. Where it starts getting a little bit more complicated is when you're dealing with all the different ways that you take audio in. So if you've got 5.1 audio, not all the suppliers supply in Dolby E, you might want that, you might want it split out, all these different things. You've got to figure out, how do I standardize bringing this in? File-based master formats are fun. there's a lack of standards. Actually, there's a lot of standards. That's the problem. There's a lot of standards. And so even if you say, you know, I'd like MXF, you know, there's OP1A, OP1B, OP Atom, you know, and then in that, there's different ways that it's wrapped. It could have, just lots of different options for how you get something in. And it comes in loads of different sizes. So what size do you want? Well, it depends what you're trying to achieve out of it. So if all you're trying to do is just get something from your supplier and just deliver it straight out, fine. If they can provide it to you in your end format, you know, in the U.S., you've got a cable labs format, there's a specific thing, fine. But if you want to do something and really use this content in multiple ways, so you want to create your 3D, you want to create your HD, you want to edit promos from it, you want to transcode it to different formats, that's a different way of approaching it. So you need to understand how it is that you want to approach it. And then which delivery formats? Again, there's a lot out there. Again, it depends what you need and what your supplier requires you to do. A lot of the studios have some very strict requirements about the security surrounding delivery of content. So you want to make sure that you're meeting their requirements, that if you need to log things, if you need to be fact-approved, if you need to encrypt things across the delivery point, if it's got to be point-to-point. And those vary. And again, 30 suppliers, up to 30 different ways of delivering content. So we try to standardize as much as we can, but we've also got to maintain that flexibility to take things in from different studios. So the next part of this puzzle is making that content usable. So you've got that content from those 30 suppliers in a format that you hope is useful to you, and now you want to do something with it. So if it's tape-based, it probably goes into your library. If it's tape-based or file-based, you're going to want to encode it into a master format. If you want to work from a master format, then got to ingest that into something that's useful, a place where you can find it again. Store it in a mezzanine file. By mezzanine file, I mean the high-res working file that you want to do something with, that allows you to transcode, that allows you to edit, all those types of things. Then there's all those transcode variants that you've got to think through. And, of course, QA. You'll probably want to QA it when it arrives. You'll probably want to QA it after you encode it, after you transcode it. And there's a lot of different ways that you look through that. So, again, you need to think about how are you going to use it. If you want to use it for transcoding and editing, what editing solution are you going to use? If you use Avid, trust me, it's one way. If you use Final Cut, it's something else. And it's now becoming a little bit easier to create a solution that can work with both. But if you want something to come in really quickly into Final Cut, it may not be the thing that comes in really quickly into Avid as well, and it may not be the best thing that you want for transcoding. So you need to do that, run those tests, get in a whole different wide range of content of the different types of things. And remember as well that different codecs behave differently. So some of them cope really well with fast scene changes. Other ones have lovely blacks. Other ones, you can pan and you can zoom, and it's all absolutely fine. And some other ones don't necessarily cope well with that. So keep in mind those bits and pieces. So how are you going to make this available for other people to use it? Well, you probably want some form of media asset management system. You've got to ingest that information in there. Are you just going to ingest the film? Do you need information around it? If you're storing audio tracks, for example, if you've got an M&E track, then music and effects, then you can do something with that for editing, and the person using it can find it. If it's not specified where it is, then it might be more difficult to find. You may want resolutions in there. You may want the different codecs, bitrate information, whatever. And you may want people to be able to see that piece of content and say, yeah, that's the one I'm looking for, or no, that's the film from the 1960s. That's not the one I'm looking for. You might even want to have the capability to have edit decision lists in there, all these kinds of things. Again, it's what it is that you require that you need to think through. Where are you using it? Again, at the end of the day, you've got to create the derivative files that you need. What are the platform requirements? Different systems have different transport stream settings, or things need to be encrypted. Different players can cope with different formats. you know, if you do something in Flash and you're using Silverlight, well, no. H.264, yeah, maybe you've got more flexibility, those types of things. So you need to think through where you're using it. And then as part of that, what are you transcoding it to or wrapping it in? So there's loads of different things out there. DECE is coming out now. It's got its common file format. You know, that's going to change things. How do you plan for that, you know, that future move? Other things like that are also happening. Again, as you're doing transcoding, which transcoder do you want to use? In addition, with different codecs behaving differently, different transcoders behave differently, what gives you the result that you need? And all I can suggest is doing lots and lots of tests and find out what gives you, for the most content, what it is that you need. And then what QA needs to be done. One of the things we've discovered is, you know, a percentage of the films when we receive them, there's a fault, or, you know, an audio glitch or something like that. We've got to return that. So there's a certain failure rate that we have to factor in to when we receive content. The only way we can really cope with that is to do QA immediately when we receive something. So you might have to have someone do a manual check through something immediately, send it off, get it back. And you may have to go through those same types of things again once you encode or transcode something. You've got to just make sure that the content's all right for moving down the rest of the path. So some of the things that are options are that manual QA. You might just want a spot check, which is looking at the beginning, the middle, and the end. And then there's some really good automated systems out there, but you need to think about what it is that you need to automate. Are you looking at the quality of it? Do you need to make sure that your transport stream settings are correct? For example, if something's on a specific PID, if it's not on that, will it break the service? It's better to do those tests early on and make sure that the content you're delivering to the service is the one that's meant for the service and isn't going to break when it gets there. And then finally, the big picture, do you have to apply DRM? Again, it depends what platform you're delivering to. In some cases, if it's directly point-to-point, maybe there's not a DRM. In a lot of cases, there are. And, of course, there's a lot of DRMs out there. It depends what you're delivering to. So there's things about which DRM, output protection levels on different DRMs. So some DRMs, like Silverlight 3, don't have output protection levels, which means that you've got certain abilities to get certain types of content that can't necessarily get something maybe like HD. So you might have to go to Silverlight 4. And then just, again, on different platforms, DECE has a whole bunch of different ones, Canvas, using Marlin. So it just depends where you're going with that particular content, and thinking about that going forwards. So once you've got that content in the formats that you can use it in, you need to store it. And it's either you're storing it somewhere for immediate use or you're archiving it off. So when thinking through that particular piece, what's your existing archive of content? Do you want to archive that in the same type of system? How much are you growing forwards? How quickly are you growing forwards? What size of content is it? How much does it cost? How quickly do you need to get to it? And for example, you may need to publish something. You may get some content in, have to process it, and then publish it. And that might be a 2-month window that you need to have that content available to you to get to regularly. You may then want to archive it off, have it just be available for use to bring back as a library content in the future. And there may be also occurrences where something goes wrong and you think, I need to retrieve this content. So you need to think through what are your retrieval times. If it's an hour, that's great. If it's 24 hours, that changes how things work. And then again, security. Anytime you store content, trust me, all of the studios will have concerns about the safety and security of their content. So you have to make sure that it's stored in an area that's either secure and or encrypted, and that you're able to log all of those electronic access rights anytime anyone logs in, anytime it has physical access, by scanning in a card to an area, all those types of things. And then finally, once you've stored that content, how does the user actually interact with it? Do you completely abstract it and just say it's stored? Do you let them know that it's stored in this type of storage so they know that it takes 24 hours to retrieve it from there? Can they see it? I mean, it's really useful to see things and just make sure that it's the content, it's the version, and it's the director's cut version that you thought it was supposed to be. And when you do this, do you want people to be able to actually just look at a low-res preview, or do you want them to actually be able to see the whole thing that you've transcoded or encoded, in which case you need to have the players available for them? So once you've got it you've got your content, you've got it in a location, probably got lots of different pieces you want to mix together. So you might have promotional content, metadata, and images, and want to be able to bring that all together into a content management system where you can use it and decide how you want to deliver it out. So you might have different sites rather than just one location. Each of them will have different ways that you need to think through how you deliver to that content. One will be able to display it a certain size or a different size. You might create a whole bunch of metadata that's sent everywhere, or you might just create some metadata that's used on one service and other pieces of that metadata that's used somewhere else, or you may need to create completely disparate sets of metadata. I mean, if you're doing something European, that might be different than if you're just focusing on one country. So the different types of content. You might have this high-resolution master, this mezzanine file, as well as all of the transcoded derivatives from it, and any promo content, images, etc. But you need to think through as well, how is all of that related to each other? So you've got your mezzanine, you've got all of your pieces coming off of that, your derivatives, you've got promo content coming in from the side. Metadata, you may have different pieces of related metadata. And then how are you going to use it? So you might, you know, if it's HD, you might do it differently than SD. If it's one platform and another, you might have different things. If it's 3D, you might want to say, put your glasses on first, and you may not want to tell people to do that if it's 2D, or you may want to tell them to do that if it's 2D. I don't know. Depends what you're watching. And then you want to deliver it. So you need to at least create a conceptual package or a physical package to do this, and then the differences in where you're delivering it to. So if you've got XML, when you're delivering it to one platform, you might be doing it to the Cable Lab specification, or you might be doing it to a bespoke specification that you've come up with for a platform that you've built. But you always want to make sure that once you do deliver it, you know it's been delivered. Trust me, that will save you a world of grief in the long run. So which bits of that content that you've created are combined together to be published out? What's your published process for publishing that out? Do you have to remember to publish something and then keep track of that in order to update it? Do you just overwrite it for the future? What format will the resulting platform understand? So if you publish out the wrong codec, it's not going to work. And what is the XML? And again, XML changes over time. So as you get sort of a new content supplier, for example, we may have to update and say, I've got a new content supplier, or I've added 3D, now I need to tell you that I'm publishing something that's 3D. And the order is very important. So if you package everything up, then that's fine. It's just one package, it goes over. If you don't package it up and you just send it in random order, then the receiving end may not understand that it has to receive, you know, it doesn't know if it's received everything yet. So in some cases, you might want to send the XML first, and then it says, ah, right, I've got to get this image, I've got to get this file. Fine. Other cases, you might want to have to do it in a reverse order. Again, how do you have to deliver it? And this side, again, it's similar. Are you using something that's got encryption? Are you using something that has acceleration? And crucially, how do you know that it's arrived successfully? You can build a handshake that gives you a message that says it's arrived, or it's arrived, but there's this specific problem with it. Some things like sticking it in a sparrow will actually tell you. You could have another QA session at the end on that side. And then with launching, you've got to consider a number of things, delivering to the end user, how you monitor, how you report, and how you deal with faults. So with testing, again, you've got whole levels of testing. You've got to think through what's appropriate for what you're trying to deliver, who has to be trained on this system. Do you have to create content before it launches? Probably. What content do you have to create? How much of it has to be ready? When does it have to be ready for? What's the reporting? If you haven't tracked something, you can't actually report on it. And then what do you have to monitor? What do you have to monitor as well? So if something has gone down to a specific regional head end, and you're only monitoring at the master head end level, you won't know that something's gone down in that region. And then how do you deal with faults? You know, is it high priority, low priority? Have you set up your SLAs for dealing with all of that? So when you tie it all together, you need to think through how everybody works. So we did something that was incorporating an existing workflow. We found out what everybody did, what worked, what didn't work, and tried to factor that into the workflow. So importantly, who has to do something? What is it they have to do? When do they have to do it by? And what happens at the end of them doing it? And how does that feed into the next thing? So hopefully at the end of all of that, you have this. You have a solution. Maybe not just this, but, you know, it looks kind of like this. You have a solution that gives you all the different things that you need. So I've asked a lot of questions of you guys to think about. If you have any questions for me, this would be a good time. Thank you.
Thank you very much. Yes, we have time for questions, and there's already one question over there. If you would.
Roderick Snell, Video Convergence Forum. An impressive explanation of why I wouldn't want to be a competitor of yours.
Thank you.
But one question. At what point, if I wanted to rent something from you, and you've done 60 million, so you must be doing it right, will the cost of the mechanics of what you've just described be too high to justify a rent for something that's in the long tail, as you might put it?
Yeah. I would say that we definitely tried to keep our costs down on doing this. As far as long tail, on our cable platform, there are limitations to the amount of content that we can have available, so you won't see a lot of long-tail content on that, but our broadband platform, that's what it's designed for, is to allow the long tail to grow over time. Once we've processed that content once and it comes back to us as library content, it doesn't necessarily incur, other than sort of publishing, republishing fees, any additional costs. So that makes it quite viable. Does that answer your question?
Well, as a percentage, how do you decide that it isn't viable? That's really the point, isn't it?
As a percentage?
Of the rental cost, yeah.
I think we've already... Long-tail stuff is stuff that we've already brought on, so it doesn't necessarily incur that much extra. So it's fine. It on that particular platform, there isn't anything extra, particularly, other than sort of a little bit for publishing. So that's something that falls within our tolerance level. So we look at the whole process and decide how we're going to do it. And in that particular case, it makes financial sense.
So you're saying that the reformatting of what's in the library for some other purpose in the long tail is negligible cost?
If you're talking about putting long tail onto an existing platform that it's already been onto and it comes back as library content, then that's fairly negligible. If you're going to go to another platform, then it depends what you've thought through about going to that platform. So if you've done everything in a format that's reusable, so say you chose something like H.264 and that's usable across a large number of things, then the costs are fairly negligible. If what you've done is, you know, encode it to a specific format that doesn't then transfer to that new platform, then you have to evaluate that. So what I try to do is figure out ways to do things that are going to be most viable going forwards where there's the least effort. I mean, I'm a least effort kind of person when it comes to having to do things again and again.
Thanks very much for a very
You're
thorough
welcome.
Treatment of that.
I think there was another question over there.
Mike Grant from Analysis Meeting. Thank you. Actually, similar question to Roderick's, but a slightly different angle to it. What worries you most? Is it the proliferation? I mean, you're delivering on one platform, right? Excuse me. You're delivering on one platform right now, as I understand, Virgin, or two. So you have a limited number of set-top boxes to format and configure for, or devices to configure for. What worries you most? Is it the proliferation of platforms and devices like Canvas, Google TV, Apple TV, different Sony connected TVs, different Samsung connected TVs, different PC browsers that you've got to deliver your existing content to? Or is it the introduction of some of the more complex capabilities of content that we're likely to see as the broadband evolution plays out? In other words, overlaying video content with programmatic applications and engines and analytics engines and overlays and so forth. In other words, the software around programs that we're likely to see in the next generation of TV.
I think the software probably bothers me a bit less. I think the main thing is because, like I said, we're 15 people. Yes, we've got some partners, we've got some very good partners, but we're 15 people. What I don't want to do is have something that we have to have a whole bunch of different code bases to maintain going forwards. I would like to do something that we can reuse for a number of different platforms, which is why things like Canvas and DEC look more interesting, rather than trying to bespoke development for this connected TV, that connected TV, this set-top box, you know, and then you've got 10,000 users here, 100,000 users there. And what if something goes... What if something discontinues? We've still got to maintain that relationship with the end users, all those types of things. So I think from a strategic point of view about ongoing development and maintenance, it makes more sense to look for something that offers an overall solution than trying to bespoke lots of different pieces. Building in sort of those relationships to different applications. Again, if you've got a bespoke load to that, then that's a problem. But building the technology to do that once for a number of different things, or just a few times for a number of different things, is a relatively straightforward. It's technical. You just do it. Any more?
Hi, Anthony Anderson with NBC Universal. I imagine with all the content providers providing content in a variety of formats, my question is along the metadata. So do you guys require your own list of metadata fields that you would want completed, or are you subscribing to another metadata service?
It's one thing we looked at because I know a lot of the studios say, you know, we've got this metadata, it'd be nice to use it. Because we've been working with Virgin Media for so long, we know the user base for that. We know their bias, we know what they think, we know what they like, you know, their diction level, how they, you know, what they're going to read. So we write our metadata knowing the type of audience that we have. And I think that allows us to create a very personal relationship and really promote those films. So at the moment, the only metadata that we get from the studios is technical metadata surrounding the content that's delivered. So we actually create all the synopses, information about all the talent, all of those bits and pieces that go in surrounding it. So I know that there's subscription services, but for us, the better thing is to have that more personal understanding of the user base that's using that and watching those films.
Well, thank you very much.